Sylvia and me.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hello, my name is Diana Green Foster. I'm a professor at the University of California, San Francisco. Welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Diana, thank you so much for being with us here today. And you are the author of The Turnaway Study. It's 10 years and 1,000 women and the consequences of having or being denied an abortion. Can you explain what precipitated you? What made you go ahead with this particular study?
Yeah. So abortion is a topic that's filled with very strong, people have very strong feelings, but there hasn't been a lot of hard data. And so assertions that may not be true are commonly shared. Assertions, things people believe but don't know if they're true, can affect the laws and policies. And so one statement in particular, the idea that abortion hurts women, has resonated, and it's inspired state laws restricting abortion, and the Supreme Court has even used it to ban one method of abortion, used that idea. But the Supreme Court, when they did that, said, but there are no reliable data.
And so you went about
this was kind of some reliable data. Okay. And it's really not an easy topic to study because most people who have abortions don't tell everyone they know about them, and they certainly don't, rush to sign up for studies. And so, what this study took was going to 30 abortion facilities across the country and recruiting women who received an abortion and women who wanted one and were denied. Because if abortion access is restricted, some women won't be able to get the abortions they want, and what are their outcomes?
And this actually took 10 years. You didn't rush into the study. You did a very methodical study. Can you explain to us how did you go about picking the clinics and also then the women who wound up being in the study?
So to do this study, we went to 30 abortion facilities across the country from Maine to Washington State, Florida, across the whole country.
Okay.
In 21 states. And we looked for sites where they turned women away and no other facility nearby would do an abortion at a later gestation. So if you were too late for that clinic, there was no clinic nearby who could do an abortion for you. And from each site, we recruited one woman who was denied, two women who were just under the gestational limit, and one woman in the first trimester, and kept recruiting for every woman denied matched group that received it.
And one of the things that we need to explain that each jurisdiction has different laws, different rules on when somebody can and cannot have an abortion, as to whether it's the first trimester, so many weeks. And one of the things I think that you you focused on were a lot of the women who were just past that particular limit, that term limit, where they were then denied. Can you go into the different, I know that you did some women in the first trimester, which from what we understand, most people, that's the greater percentage of women who do have an abortion.
Yes.
But there are women who, as crazy as it sounds, some women don't even realize that they're pregnant. How do you explain that? Because I know there are so many people who say that cannot be true.
Well, certainly it is true, but it's also very rare. 90-something percent of women who have abortions in this country do so in the first trimester. So when I say that some women don't realize they're pregnant, it's not that it's common, but when it happens, it makes it much more difficult to get care. And that can happen because people have just given birth, and so they haven't gone back to a regular cycle, and they might not realize they're at risk of pregnancy again. It can happen because they have chronic health conditions that have the same symptoms as pregnancy. And then it can happen to people who just don't have pregnancy symptoms. I mean, we all know women who have really easy labors, and the rest of us suffer mightily in delivery. Everyone has a different physiological response to pregnancy. So it's not crazy that some women would just not have the symptoms of pregnancy.
One of the things that you did, that your study was really focused on, was the emotional health of these women who had an abortion and the ones who were denied. So the emotional health and also the social economic health. Can we go into some of the emotional health? Because there's so much out there saying that, oh, it destroys a woman's mental health. They'll regret it for the rest of their lives. They'll never be the same. Can you go into what your study found over these last 10 years, and how did you come to these conclusions?
So we did almost 8,000 interviews with women, following each of them for 5 years, and it was, mental health was really our primary concern, and we had validated measures of mental health so that we were very careful how we asked people and that we used the same questions that other people ask to measure mental health. And we found no increase in mental health for women who had abortions. In fact, their symptoms of depression and anxiety go down over time. For women who are denied abortions, there's a short period of heightened anxiety, loss of self-esteem, loss of life satisfaction that happens right at the beginning because they've just been denied an abortion and they're realizing that they are about to have a baby that they felt that they weren't able to take care of. And so there's a short-term mental health harm from being denied an abortion. And in the long run, the women who receive an abortion actually report that they stop thinking about the abortion. And they say, one woman said, I only think about it when you call me every 6 months about these interviews. And over 95% of women at every time point that we interviewed them said that they still felt that abortion was the right decision for them.
Now, the
very different from what that idea that abortion hurts women is not factually based. In fact, women feel like they made the right decision.
And I believe that one of the results of your study is that on an economic level, an economic health, that being denied an abortion can be devastating for a lot of women and their families.
Yeah. So there were no differences in the long run in mental health between women who received and women who were denied abortions. But there were big differences in those two groups. And I trace all the differences to what women said was their reason for wanting an abortion. So when you ask women, why do you want an abortion? The most common reasons are economic, that they feel like they can't afford to have a child or to have another child. And we see big economic differences. Women who are denied abortions, it won't be too surprising to your listeners, it's hard to hold a full-time job when you are pregnant. And about to deliver. And the loss of employment income is not quite, the gains in some public assistance is just not enough to offset all the extra costs of having a baby. So women are actually more likely to be poor if they're denied an abortion than if they receive one. Some of the other reasons that women give for wanting an abortion also hint at the differences. They say that they want to have an abortion because they need to take care of their existing children. And about over half of women who have abortions are already mothers. And we see that their existing children do worse when their moms are denied an abortion as opposed to receive an abortion.
Now, the women in the study, they were made up of a very diverse group of women. Can you kind of tell us about some of the makeup of these women that you chose for the study?
We approached all, choosing is not quite, we approached all women who were denied, and we picked the next, we, for every woman denied, we recruited the next woman who received an abortion. So we weren't picking and choosing. And we found that when, from our recruitment strategy, they look, the demographics of the people in our study look just like women who seek abortions in clinics nationally. So they're disproportionately low income, but not entirely low income. And they come from every racial ethnic group. About half of them are in their 20s. About one in five is a teenager. And they come from every religious group, every 40 states across the country. So it we have a very diverse sample. It reflects the diversity of women seeking abortions nationally. Where our study is different is that women, our study disproportionately has women seeking later abortions. And because all the restrictions on abortion make it so difficult if you're late in discovering pregnancy to actually get care, to travel a long distance, to pay more money, to spend more time away from your family or your job, women who are low income are more likely to be pushed later.
So, now, when you say later, I mean, these women weren't, there were some women who were denied, they were a day or a couple of days beyond what the term is. What were most of the reasons why they weren't able to fit into whatever the rules were in the closest clinic that they were they would go to?
So we, the women who were denied, people who were late in seeking pregnancy, it's largely a problem of late recognition of pregnancy, followed by a huge slew of barriers to getting care. So trying to raise the money to pay for an abortion, trying to arrange the travel, knowing where to go. Most of these facilities, not all of the facilities set their limits based on state law. Sometimes it's the clinic policy or the skill and willingness of the abortion provider, the nurse or doctor who provides care. So the limits are vary from 10 weeks all the way to the end of the second trimester.
So there are barriers that are up there that no one would really even know about unless they were the ones who had set the rules and regulations for each one of these clinics to begin with.
On top, I think even the people who set the rules don't realize. I'm sure that people who pass gestational limit bans aren't thinking about the women involved. If they I think there's just a lack of compassion for the experience of having an unwanted pregnancy. And if they thought a little bit more about it, they might see that people are making the best decisions they can for themselves. I think people think maybe that later abortion is that you didn't care enough to hurry up. And that's absolutely not what we found. People are working very hard. They're visiting multiple facilities, being turned away, looking for another facility, trying to borrow a car, trying to get their car fixed, trying to get somewhere far away in order to get care. So there isn't this assumption of irresponsibility is wrong. It's just actually very difficult to access abortion care in a lot of the United States.
And one of the things that you did, as you mentioned before, one of the women who had one said she didn't think about it other than when you called every couple of months. So that's very important. You followed up with these women throughout the study. Can you explain exactly how that took place?
Yeah, I had a team of amazing, brilliant women interviewers. They were highly trained, and they worked from like 6 a.m. till 8 p.m. for years doing these interviews. I swear they didn't work each of those shifts all by themselves. But still, they worked really hard over years. And they called the women for interviews every 6 months, but we called to check in because now in the age of cell phones, people don't keep their phones reliably for every 6 months. So we're trying to check in and trying to keep in touch with people. It was a major endeavor. I salute the women who were the interviewers for this study.
So aside from financial reasons, economic reasons, what were some of the other reasons that women had who wanted an abortion?
Yeah, so the most common is financial. Another reason is that it isn't the right time for a baby. And that we actually looked at women who received the abortion and then had another baby within the study time period. So, and we found that the child born, because the woman was allowed to get an abortion and had a baby later, that child did better than the child born because the mom was denied an abortion. In terms of the economic well-being of that child and also the mom's reporting of her maternal bonding with that child. So the first reason was economic. The second reason was not the right time. I think the third reason had to do with the man involved in the pregnancy. And interestingly, this is an area where we found no difference. The women said their relationship was not strong enough to raise a child. And we found that the relationships dissolved regardless of whether the woman had a baby or had an abortion. They steadily dissolved over the 5 years. And I think the next reason is being able to care for your existing children, which is something I mentioned. And if you ask a question slowly, I'm going to reach and try and find my paper that says what the next reason is.
All right. And one of the other things that the study showed was the fact that when somebody said it was financial reasons, that usually was not the only reason.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, I think it would be very sad if people were having abortions when they want babies because they felt like they couldn't afford it. And that is very rare. People give economic reasons, but they give a lot of other reasons as well. And I just looked up, the fifth most common reason is an interesting one, is one in five women, 20%, report that they want an abortion because having a baby right now would interfere with their future opportunities. And we actually measured this too. We asked the people in the study what they foresaw their life being like in a year. And the women who received an abortion were much more likely to set aspirational goals for the next year. Those include things like getting a better job, getting a better relationship, moving into their own home, finishing a degree. And they were much more likely to have an aspirational plan for their year than women who had just been told they could not have an abortion.
So not only on a personal with their own, what would affect their own life and their own family, it affects all of society because these women, if they wind up, as you just said, the children aren't doing as well as the other children when an abortion is denied and they're then forced to have a child. And the financial and the emotional toll that it takes on not only the mother, but the children that the mother winds up having is it's a domino effect. It's not just in their own little nuclear center.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what I would like people to take home from this study is that women are making careful decisions when they decide that an abortion is the right decision for them. They're weighing all of their responsibilities and their aspirations, and they're making the right decision for themselves. We don't have to step out so far as to make arguments about society, but these individual women, their lives and the trajectory of their lives are strengthened when they are able to make their own decisions about pregnancy.
And as you said, there's so much involved. It's not you know, people have an idea that women who want an abortion are making snap judgments. They don't really think about it. They don't know anything. The other thing is that it's perceived that it's a very dangerous procedure.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, that we did look at physical health as well and had very important findings that I think are surprising to people. The medical literature is completely clear that having an abortion is associated with lower risk than carrying a pregnancy to term and going through delivery. And we found that completely borne out in our data. There were very serious complications from birth and not serious complications from abortion. Longer periods of disability after birth compared to abortion. And the saddest part of the study is that two women died of childbirth-related reasons in the study after being denied an abortion, which is heartbreaking and also shocking, way higher maternal mortality than we would have expected. And I think it's something of a fluke that happened, but it does indicate how high risk pregnancy is, and that, you know, the fact that many women choose to be pregnant and choose to undertake this risk shouldn't blind us to the idea that pregnancy is a serious investment of one's body into making another, and the risks are serious, and to force women to do it when they're not ready to have a child involves subjecting them to the risk even of death.
You actually have a very interesting story within your own family. Your grandmother on your father's side and your grandmother on your mother's side. So can you go into that? Because if I say it, I'm liable to get the wrong thing. But go ahead, tell it, because I think it's very interesting.
Right. I tell the story because I think that we actually, all our families, if we talked openly about it, all of our families have stories of unwanted pregnancy. This is super common and not commonly talked about. So my dad's mother had an illegal abortion during the Depression because she, like women today who have abortions, felt like she couldn't afford to have a child. And she went on to have three children and be a happy mother when they were in better economic circumstances. But still, she had an illegal abortion because in the 30s, it wasn't legal. And my mother's biological mother became pregnant when she was 19. And her parents pressured her to have an abortion, and she resisted. And I don't know exactly why she resisted. She was definitely a strong-willed, make-your-own-decisions kind of person. But they, for religious reasons, did not want her to have a baby out of wedlock. They were conservative Christians, and that was something they were very worried about. And at that time, abortion wasn't as stigmatized as it is today, compared to having a child out of wedlock. And she placed my mom for adoption, and we found her many years later. And she resisted getting an abortion herself, but she was actually pro-choice. She's an example that people have to make their own decisions. It's not about, even pro-choice people can decide to carry an unwanted pregnancy to term. And we find in our study, even people who say they're opposed to abortion sometimes decide it's the right decision for themselves.
Well, that's a very interesting story. And as you said, people don't talk about it. So here you are. Your mother had you. You don't know what the future brings, but to be able to have that choice and be able to decide what you want to do. And to me, one of the biggest takeaways is the fact that women do think long and hard about it. It's not knee-jerk decision. It's not a selfish decision as people would think. And there's so much to be learned from this. And as you mentioned at the beginning when we were talking, this is a very, very important time in our daily lives with some huge decisions that are going to be coming up.
Yeah. So the Supreme Court is just about to issue a major abortion ruling. The case is called June Medical Services versus Russo. And in some ways, it is exactly the same case the Supreme Court heard 4 years ago and decided that this one restriction was unconstitutional. But in the last 4 years, the composition of the court has changed. We have new justices on who say that they're opposed to abortion. So if they rule differently, it will not just mean that this one admitting one law in Louisiana can take effect. And if it does, then the whole state of Louisiana will have only one provider. But it also, it would be a statement that it doesn't matter what the harms of a restriction are when you consider whether it's constitutional or not. Previously, the court has said restrictions can't cause an undue burden on women seeking abortion. And if they decide this case differently, it will be saying you don't have to make that assessment of whether the harms outweigh the benefits or the benefits outweigh the harms. Any restriction is fine. Because in this case, it's so clear that the harms of the restriction outweigh the benefits. There are negligible benefits. And it would shutter two or three of the clinics in Louisiana.
Well, Diana, this study came out, the results and this book came out really at the right time. And I hope we get the word out for people to be informed. And being really informed with real data, not assumptions and not emotions, but data that can show that being denied is more harmful to not only the woman, but the children that they wind up having. So very, very important study. And I know that we're talking about this right now. We're in the midst of the pandemic. Some things are opening. And at the beginning of this pandemic, it was not called an essential service. That had to be fought. So I am happy that I got to talk to you today. Again, the book is the Turnaway Study, and it just came out in June, right? So this is, you know, this is great. Diana, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Appreciate it. Is there a website that people can take a look at, or do they just go to? Okay, so tell us the website.
Turnawaystudy.com. Turnawaystudy is all one word. .com, and it will take you to Meet the Women Scientists. This was a collaboration of a huge group of women scientists, so you can read about some of the scientists who worked on this study. It'll also, if you wanted to, we're going to be putting lectures for college classes up there. You can read reviews of the book. You can see book events like this one. The website is turnawaystudy.com.
Diana, again, thank you so much. This has been exceedingly informative.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.